Accession number 18262, Reel 5.
Frank Carter, Reel 5.
Right, coming back to the patrol that was sent to the river, it was C Company under Captain Temple and not D Company, as I said before. Referring back to when we got captured, we were took to this valley where the Chinese were all camouflaged and all dug in under the hillsides in the valley. Now, we were on the forward slope leading into the valley. We had just come over a hill, and we were about halfway down, I should think, into the valley, when we heard a roaring at the end of the valley. Looking up, looking down, we were so high up, looking down into the valley, there were three black American dive bombers coming up the valley and machine gunning everything that was in the valley that they could see. Now, we were on the forward slope, and the Chinese guards that were with us told us to lay down. Now, we were led down right in the open, and I've never been so terrified in my life. I could see these big black dive bombers coming up the valley, machine gunning, and all the time coming towards me and my mates that were led on the side of the hill. I had my hands spread out, and I led there just terrified. The planes were so low that we could practically touch them as they flew over us. And as I led there, I could see the machine gun bullets coming up the hill towards me. And actually, the machine gun bullets went between my two fingers and went on over the hill. This happened for about three times. They swoop round and came on once more. Eventually, they went away. And when we looked up, there had eventually been about eight of us. In the row that was going on between the Chinese that were doing a lot of shouting and the guards trying to get us to get up, one man had done a runner, and he escaped over the back of the mountain that we came from. And I looked down forward in the valley, and one of our chaps was dead. He'd been shot by so-called friendly fire. Anyhow, just after this, the Chinese battalion started to move out. They were returning back across the Imjin River. They got to the end of their job, I suppose, and they were returning across the Imjin River. And the guards then picked us up, and we left the dead chap there. I don't know what happened to him. And the guards took us away from the battalion and took us round to the side of another hill, a small hill. And there they sat us down, the six of us. They sat us down along this hillside, and we thought, well, this is it, they're going to shoot us. But instead of that, someone else, another Chinese company of troops, came round the corner and got us to stand up, and they started to search us. All photographs of your family they took away and threw on the ground, and all other paperwork they took from us. But a funny thing, which came in handy later on, they never took the Bibles from us, with the Bibles that we've been issued with. And later on, they come in very handy, as I'll tell you as I go along. And from there on, they searched us and took everything away, cigarettes, watches, and everything that you had left in your pockets. And they took us round the corner onto the side of this other hill that was just across the valley. And when we got round there, there must have been over 200 of our chaps sat on the side of this hill. And eventually, you know, we thought we were the only ones who'd been captured at the time. There was about 200 of our chaps on the side of the hill there. And they look all very exhausted with beards. No one could recognize them. But someone shouted out, "What's up, Nick? Couldn't you run fast enough?" So there was a little bit of humour left in the crowd. And anyhow, I was by this time my eye was bleeding again once more. The blood was running down on my face, down my neck. And I got the medical corporal to get hold of another field dressing and put it on my head. And anyhow, after a while, we'd had no food for the last 2-3 days. No one had eaten. We were all getting very hungry. The Chinese did not seem to have any food either. So it was getting on late toward dusk then, and we were told to stop on this hill as we were stopping the other night by some Chinaman that could speak a bit of English. We were going to sleep there all night. So that was it. We stopped there the night. Must have been about just becoming light next morning. I was on the edge of the crowd, and must have been coming very light, and I felt a touch on my shoulder. I thought it was one of the chaps that was up above me, pushing me, moving and sort of pushing me with his foot. So I woke up, and I was sort of half asleep, half dazed from a wound, and I looked up, and there was this Chinese guard with his bayonet pointed towards me, and he was telling me to get up. So I thought, well, what do they want this time of the morning? Everyone else was more or less half asleep or dozing. And I got up, and he told me to follow him. I got to the edge of the trees on the side of the hillside, and there were about 4 or 5 other ones of our chaps there. We were all exhausted, very tired, and we just sort of followed on the orders that they gave us. We had no spirit left in us. We'd been fighting for 3 days, and everyone was dead beat and dead tired. They took us by, and as the daylight came, it was still very, very foggy. In Korea, the fog lies low in the valleys, as there's no wind to take it out. And as you penetrate deeper into the valleys, the fog gets thicker. They took us down the side of this hill, and we entered into the fog blanket that was halfway up, and making our way to the bottom. And all of a sudden, the Chinese, there was about 5 of them, told us to stop. Off they went, left us there. I don't think any of us had enough strength to run. We could have escaped very easily in the fog and probably could have got away. But I don't think any of us had that thought in mind. The Chinese went about 10 yards away, and we could hear them talking. We thought, well, what the hell's going on over there? Anyhow, this is the sort of Chinese humour that you'll get. They seemed to be lost. They were all in a ring and arguing with one another which way to go. But really, I knew that we had to go down the hill if they were going to get anywhere. But anyhow, one of the chaps that was with us had a packet of cigarettes that the Chinese hadn't found, I suppose. Or maybe he hadn't been searched. And he passed one all around, and we were sat there smoking, too exhausted to run away. And the Chinese came back, and directly they saw us smoking, they started to threaten us with their bayonets and their guns and things like that to make us put the cigarettes out. Of course, we were still on edge, very much on edge. We dropped the cigarettes, trod on them, and sat down again. All of a sudden, all the Chinese started to laugh and point at us and point to the cigarettes, and they started to laugh amongst ourselves. It's some sort of Chinese humour that they frightened us that much that we dropped the cigarettes and sat down again. But we had the laugh on them later on. Off we went again, down into the valley, and through the fog, slipping and sliding down through the very, very the mud parts of the mud that we slipped and slid down to the hill, down to the bottom of the hill. Along the bottom of the hill, unbeknown to us and unbeknown to the Chinese, was a 4-foot ditch with about 6 inches of mud in the bottom, I suppose. The Chinese were ahead of us, and there were some Chinese behind us. The Chinese went forward, these guards went forward, slipped and slid and fell straight into the muddy ditch. Of course, this was our chance to laugh at them. So we started to laugh, and they were very, very uptight over that. We started to laugh at these Chinese as they fell into this muddy ditch. You couldn't help it. It was just a humour that came out. And the reaction of them as they came up, one came up with mud all over his face. And the reaction of that made us laugh a lot more. And you know, they shouted and screamed at us and told us to stop laughing. So we get down, we got into the ditch, went to cross it, this small ditch. It was about 4 foot wide. Went to cross it, and we were told to stop where we are. We could hear some movement in the fog. And about 2 yards away from the ditch, there was a track that led back through past Battalion Hill. Up out of the fog came about 30, 35 Chinese walking wounded, making their way back past Battalion Hill and towards the Imjin River and back again. They had wounds all over them. They were arms, bodies, heads covered in bandages, but they were walking. The Chinese had no transport at all to get their wounded out. And right at the rear of them, as they passed, there was a chap with a rifle. But what he was there for, I don't know, because there was no harm going to come to these wounded chaps. In fact, we felt sorry for them, the state they were in. And some of them had these paper bandages on. Some had normal bandages. Some had field dressings on that they'd taken from our chaps, I should think. And they were walking back towards the Imjin River. The fog was still very thick, as we didn't see them until they came right up close to us. We let them pass. We got out of the ditch and crossed the track and went to the right of our old positions. I recognised it because up on the right-hand side of the hill, as we went through the small valley between the two hills, was this Korean burial ground with these two stones up. And I'll never forget, the stones had faces on them. And I remembered them from the day before. And I knew just beyond this hill was a small village, Korean village. We were heading towards this village, but in the general direction of the Imjin River, across the paddy fields, towards the paddy fields. We got to the village, and I was surprised to see that some of the houses were still occupied by the Koreans, by the Korean peasants. And as I went through the village, I recognised this old chap that I'd been speaking to only a couple of days before. And he looked at me, and he showed no sign of recognition on his face at all. I thought he'd smile or something like that, but he didn't. I suppose he was frightened of the guards. I don't know. If they saw him smiling at us, they'd probably shoot him or something like that. We went on part through the village and started across the paddy fields. We were walking on the buns between the two paddy fields. It's a raised up piece of ground, bank that they built. between each paddy field. We're walking along this in the thick fog, but in the meantime, over our heads was coming the artillery. The artillery were still firing airbursts down onto the Imjin River. An airburst is a shell that explodes about 20 foot above the ground and fires shrapnel towards the ground to catch anyone that's walking. And we started to run. We were made to run. And my head started to bleed again. Blood all down the front of my shirt now. And we got to within 100 yards of the Imjin River, and we were told to sit down behind this small hill. A small bund, I should say, not a hill. And we were sat down there, and the Chinese had their watches out, and they were counting between each shell burst that came over. They were counting the minutes between each shell burst. There was E, Sa, Sir, W. And then they'd go again. E, Sa, Sir, W. And they'd look at their watches and time the airburst it went over. And what they were doing, they were timing the airburst to see how long the gap was to give them chance, and us, chance to get across the Imjin River without catching the explosions as they came. The shell burst stopped. We could hear the original ones as they came whistling over our head. Then all of a sudden they stopped. The Chinese were up, shouting and screaming at us, run, run as fast as you can. We had 100 yards to go to the river. I think the river must have been nearly 100 yards wide, and it came up to my waist. Some of these Chinese were smaller, and it came up to their shoulders. The panic you could see in their eyes, in fact, the panic in our eyes we could see as well, I should think. We had to get across that river before the next shell burst arrived, the air burst arrived. Now, we got to the other side, and I've never run so fast in my life. I ran up, I overtook the Chinese guards and a couple of our other chaps, but there were some in front of me, going like the clappers we were. We ran up away from the river as fast as we could, and all of a sudden we heard the whistling of the shells coming over again. I hit the ground flat. Everyone hit the ground, Chinese guards and everything. And the air burst started to splatter into the water. You could hear the splash as the explosion threw the shrapnel into the water. You could hear it splash. And lucky enough, we were about 50 yards away from the explosion, and we were lucky enough we were out of the range of the downward spiral of the shrapnel. The shooting stopped. The Chinese guards got us up and made us run again, and we did run. I've never run so fast in my life, as I was saying. And they took us on a couple more miles, and above us in the fog we could hear the American airplanes looking for targets. And lucky for us, the fog was that thick that they couldn't see any targets. Otherwise, I think we would have been shot up as well. We arrived in this village about 2 miles away from the Imjin, and it must have been 11 o'clock in the morning, I suppose. 11, 12. I still felt hungry, very hungry, and everyone felt hungry. We still hadn't been fed. The Chinese hadn't eaten either, so we had nothing to complain about, really. They hadn't stopped for food. We arrived in this village, and we could smell cooking. There was a Chinese company there, I suppose. They were cooking rice in these big Korean dishes, that's big basins over a wood fire, and they had this rice bubbling away there, and it smelt lovely. But unbeknown to us, this rice was for the company of Chinese troops that were there. We were told we were going to get no food until the evening. They put us into this hut, and In the distance, as they pushed us in the door, there was no doors on the houses, just an opening, which a guard stood in front of. As I looked out through the door, the other side of the village, I could see the Chinese wounded and medical personnel running amongst them, bandaging them up and things like that. And a couple of bullock carts with the bullocks still in the shafts with Chinese dead soldiers on. You could tell they were dead. They just covered up their faces and top half, and the feet were sticking out the bottom. It must have been 8 or 9 people on each bullock cart. They always took their own dead back with them, the Chinese. You never very seldom found a dead Chinese soldier unless the position had been overrun and they couldn't get him away. We eventually were pushed into this hut, and the warmth of the day and the tiredness of us, I suppose, the exhaustion of us, we fell asleep. And I woke up, and it was dusk then, and I could hear these voices, and they were English voices. And what it was the rest of the lads that was that had been captured, had brought up later on when the shelling had ceased across the river. But what we were expendable, the 8 of us. They were going to see if they could get across the river earlier, and we were the expendable ones to try it out. I suppose the word went back that they couldn't get the rest of them across because there were too many. And we were the experiment, really, to see if we could get across the river. And they never brought the rest across until later on. Lucky for them, the fog still stopped. It laid low that day, which was lucky for everyone, really. And there was the planes were still flying above, and they, of course, they couldn't see any targets as the fog covered everything. When the arrest arrived in the village, they were all allocated different rooms, packed in. As many as 20 in a room, 20 or 30 in a room of 10 by 6 or something like that. You led down on the next chap. We were told we were going to stop there the night, and we were going to be fed. About 9 o'clock in the evening, when all the American planes had gone, the Chinese started cooking again. And they cooked us up these great big bowls of rice. We had nothing to eat. We had no canteen cutlery or nothing. We had no food trays or nothing. So we had to take this rice in your hand and eat it out of your hands. In amongst it was a few beans thrown in, haricot beans thrown into the rice. And that was our first meal, and it was lovely. It tasted beautiful, although we were eating it out of our hands. And by God, as you know, rice holds its heat. But you didn't seem to worry as you dug your hand into the rice to get this rice and eat it, whether you burnt your hand or not. Everyone went to sleep that night. They were bloated, or they thought they was going to go to sleep that night. Everyone led down. It must have been about 11 o'clock. Everyone was told to get up. From now on, for the next 2 weeks or more, we are going to be traveling by night in a column. All of us, the American prisoners that had been captured as well, the few Filipinos, we had Turks, and amongst everything, all captured. We are going to be marched for the next 2 weeks at night time so that we wouldn't get attacked by planes. We set off, and we are covering about to the north. We are covering about 15 to 20 miles a night. But as time went on, people were getting weaker. There were people who were getting dysentery through drinking water out the paddy fields and things like that. And the Chinese admittedly tried to stop these chaps drinking water out the paddy field. People were so exhausted. And all we were getting was one meal a day. At night time, when we were travelling by night, but after 2 weeks, we were far enough away from the front line, far enough away from the aeroplanes, not to give us any, it wouldn't do any harm to us, couldn't see us. But as the Sabres used to fly over very high, you could see their trails in the sky as they flew over. The Chinese would panic, shout, and everyone had to jump into the ditch at the side of the road. Most of the Korean roads, small roads, had ditches in the side of them because of the rains in the monsoon season out there, very heavy. It used to start at the back of the column. One Chinaman did shout. He was 50 yards away from the rear of the column to listen for if there was any aeroplanes coming. He'd shout, and it'd come right up through the column. The guards that were going to shout to the next one. And everyone would jump into the ditch while we watched the planes go over very high. They couldn't have seen us anyhow. This went on for another 4 weeks. Marching by daylight, this was now. And I remember one day we were walking along, and the day was lovely. It was a lovely day. It was a hot, warm day. It was warm that time of the year. As I say, April and May in Korea is lovely. It's just like an English springtime. A beautiful part of the world. And I was always sort of nature conscious, and I used to notice the things, flowers and things like that. Everything was blooming and smelling nice, and the bees and the birds. And every time we passed a stream or some sort of stream, I'd look in it, see if I could see anything. And as we were walking along the road this day, in the distance, we could see a line of bullock carts in front of us. Now, we see them, and we were marching a lot faster than the bullocks were walking, and we eventually caught up with these 6 or 8 bullock carts in front of us. And these bullock carts were piled high with these dried tobacco leaves. Now, no one had had a smoke, and nothing for the last couple of weeks, and they were gasping for cigarettes. I think the majority of us were smoking. In fact, you know, we were issued with 3 cigarettes in the army. We used to get a tin of 50 a week, and used to get different firms, tobacco firms, would send free packets up to the troops in the line, like Pall Mall and a few of the other cigarettes. And we caught up these carts, and as we went by, everyone would lean over with the Chinese guard shouting and screaming at us not to do it. But they lean over and pull out a huge leaf of this tobacco out of the cart and carry on, taking no notice of the guards. The guards were just shouting and threatening us. But I think they realised that we wanted to smoke. Now, we had no paper. Now, this is where I said about the Bible coming in handy. These small Bibles that the padre gave us, the paper in there was very, very thin. And so a paper out of the Apostle of St. John or Matthew, Mark, Luke, and a sheet of that was ideal paper, smoking paper. And we done the American version, whereby you roll it up into a cornet shape and screw the end up and shove your tobacco into it, and you smoked it.